Okay, well, we're here. It's Turn It Off with Tracy, episode 6, not 6666. You will know the podcast by the mark of the beast. We watched The Exorcist, and let's not bury the lead here. You watched the whole thing.
I made it.
You made it, and you didn't even ask to turn it off.
Nope.
I am amazed, but also not amazed. The reason I am amazed is because this is a really intense movie.
It's a very intense movie.
But at the same time, going by what you have said about what you don't like about horror movies, I thought this actually would be something that you would like, because it's not, as you talked about with The Shining, people
being mean
to one another. Mm-hmm. It's a love story about a mom's love for her daughter, mm-hmm. and this horrible thing that happens to them. So I actually thought that if you could get past
the attic scene,
the grosser elements of it, you would really hook into this movie.
And I really nearly at the attic scene. I'm like, this is it. I'm done.
Right in the attic scene where she goes to look for the rats.
2003 to 2017, that run's done too.
we're done. We're gonna be done. But
who was it that volunteered you a place to stay?
David Ace Gutierrez offered me
on his way.
No. Well, I mean, what did you think of this movie?
Oh wow, that's like.
I was watching you watch it, and you were pretty into it. I could say
yes, and yeah, you know, I can't even be coherent. I'm sorry. It was very intense. It was really scary. That business, I'm sorry. Who goes up in the attic at night when the house is making noises? Okay, backtrack a little bit. Who stays in the house when the house is making noises? And who thinks that that low level, that's rats? Mm-hmm. Rats don't do that.
Right.
Rabbits do. That was really scary.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's very. I would say a lot of people probably say this is the greatest horror movie ever made, if not the greatest. It's up there. It's always on the list of the great horror movies, and it deserves to be. I think it's a masterpiece. It's in terms of the story that William Friedkin is trying to tell. It's a slow build.
That's something I thought was really interesting at the beginning. How they make you think something's going to happen and it doesn't, and then they give you a rest. And then they make you think something's going to happen, and it doesn't. And then they give you a rest. Like, they kept doing that, which I think was why I felt like screaming a couple times, especially in the attic. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No. I wanted to. We're here to talk to you, babe. They already hear from me all the time.
So, yeah, that I thought that was, I'm like, they're really toying with me. That's just me.
Mm-hmm. I said it's a very slow build in that. You get into the relationship between the mother and the daughter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they had such a nice relationship.
Right. And the way it, like, there's just little things here and there, you know? It's just like when she's like, Reagan, what are you doing on my bed? I couldn't sleep. My bed was shaking. Right. But you just dismiss that because you're like, but you know that's a movie. But I mean, that's all that they say.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing is where she goes and she talks to the astronaut where she's like, you're going to die up there. And then she piddles on the carpet. Like, that's another weird. And you're like, okay. And all the doctors are being very reasonable. Because, of course, the doctors are like, she's not possessed. That's not a thing. So they keep insisting it's this, you know, frontal lobe lesion. And we all know that it isn't. And poor Ellen Burstyn is just falling apart. Now, just to give you some backstory, they originally tried to get Audrey Hepburn for this.
No.
Could you imagine putting Audrey Hepburn through this grind?
No.
It might have been unendurable
to watch. No, she's too delicate.
Yeah. No. They offered it to her, and she was living in Rome at the time, and she said she would do it if they shot it in Rome.
Interesting.
And William Friedkin wanted to shoot it in Washington, D.C., and so they said no. So he went for Ellen Burstyn. But, yeah, I can't imagine this movie with... They offered it to Jane Fonda. They offered it to everybody, pretty much. In terms of directors...
Poor Ellen Burstyn.
Well, Ellen Burstyn, to be fair to her, she wasn't as big a name as some of the others. So that's why she was further down on the list.
Nobody wants to be offered, like, 18th time.
They offered it, the directing, to Mike Nichols, mm-hmm. who did The Graduate and who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. So he was a big deal. And he said there is no way I could put any child actor through that.
Wow.
He just couldn't imagine himself to do it. Friedkin was much more of a wild child.
He's not sure.
Not to jump ahead, but at the very end of the movie where the other priest is giving absolution to Father Damien as he's dying, you know, the way he's like, his hand is quivering. Just before they shot that scene, they had done it a couple of times, and that the father, who's a real reverend, he's not an actor.
Oh, okay.
He couldn't get it. He just couldn't get the intensity that Friedkin wanted, and Friedkin kept kind of get like, come on, I need you to, and he couldn't do it. So off camera, he slapped the priest across the face and then rolled the camera, which is why he looked so shattered. So Friedkin was not worried about being nice. He wanted to get his movie made.
Whoa.
Yeah. You imagine having the temerity to slap a priest across the face?
No.
but like I said, other than the scene in the attic, which is probably the most jump scare of the whole thing, because it's got the flame and stuff. This movie isn't jump scares. It really is more of a, it's intense. It's a grind. I think Roger Ebert described it as a frontal assault.
Yeah.
But it's not a jump scare movie. It really isn't, which is why I thought you would probably either not quote unquote enjoy it, but be able to get through it and be involved in it.
I was definitely involved in it. And although there was a point where I'm like, oh my God, this movie is long and it's exhausting.
It seemed very
exhausting. Not as exhausting as Finding Nemo.
No, well, the white knuckle terror of Finding Nemo. William Friedkin's Finding Nemo.
Poor William Friedkin is like, SMH.
Yeah. You know, I saw this movie the first time when I was in my early 20s. And I remembered being really unnerved by it. Mostly all the medical scenes, because you just feel so bad what they're putting poor Reagan through. And they're putting through all the spinal, which I told you not to look at, which is really, you wouldn't have been able to get through that because there's blood spurting at one point. Oh. You would not have been able to get through that. But when they put her in the medical thing and that thing, like the camera's like
MRI,
ka-chung, like it sounds like she's getting hit by a pile driver and she starts to scream. And
I had one of those.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, awful. Does it sound that bad? Oh yes. My God, it's terrible. I mean, like you got through it though, and you got through the vomiting. You got through.
I didn't watch the vomiting come out. Although
I warned you about
it. It was on everything, and I imagined that it smelled really bad.
Well, they suggest that when the psychiatrist is talking, where he's like, "You are also hypnotized," and she starts going like, "Hey," and you see Ellen Burstyn put her hand over her mouth, like, "Oh my God, it's the most rancid, awful."
You know, yeah, she was the only one who gave in any kind of indication, and I wasn't even sure that that was smell. I thought it could also be she was just so upset that she was literally about to gag.
It could have been that, but I always look at that. It smells makes like sense. Death.
It you looked know, like it smelled like death.
So, I mean, but you didn't enjoy it, right? That's not the right word for it. But you were involved again, like with the Shining.
You were involved.
In the, was this of the ones we've done so far? Was this probably like your I hate to use the word favorite, but is this the one you kind of got?
Yeah, not an appropriate.
Okay.
I would say this is the one I was the most involved in.
There you go. Well, that's all anybody can ask for when you're watching a movie. Are you getting involved in what's going on?
I'm very proud of myself for making it the whole way through.
I am so proud of you. I mean, what do I get? I am proud of you that you did it, but I also thought that you might because it's not cheap. Jump scares. It's a real movie about real characters going through something extraordinary. And if you hook into the characters, then it really doesn't. The rest of it is just sort of detail. So that's. I mean, Ellen Burstyn is tremendous in this movie. Poor Linda Blair, what they put her through.
Amazing job.
Jason Miller, who is Father Damien, he is great. He just loves that permanent haunted look. A little bit about Jason Miller was that they originally cast Stacy Keach in that part, and they even had him ready, and the contracts were signed, and then Jason Miller apparently, I guess, got wind of the part and sold himself to Friedkin, and he was like, I have to play this part. And Jason Miller was like a nobody, really, and he was like, I am this part. I need to play this part, and he convinced Friedkin.
Wow.
And they actually had to buy Stacy Keach out of his contract, and it cost a bunch of money, and Warner Brothers was like, no, don't do that. You're wasting money. We have Stacy Keach. And Friedkin is like, nope, it's got to be this guy. And he was right, because he is such a great presence in this movie.
And I have a hard time imagining Stacey Keach.
Yeah, Jason Miller is just, he looks so permanently haunted. I mean, the dream sequence, I think, is great. This creepy dream sequence. And, and then, you know, it's hard for me to picture any actor pulling off the moment where he yells, come into me, come into me. And, you know, that he accepts the demon into him, into his own
and
body.
And then thrusts him out
and
again.
Then he has enough self-control to know that he could kill the demon by killing himself.
He was stronger than a little girl.
Yeah.
So very generous sacrifice. But then he paid the ultimate price.
Yes. I mean, that stairwell now has killed two people. They really need to put up a fence or something around it. Actually, to me, the creepiest part of the movie is after when Father Damien comes into the room and he finds
his mother's
Max von Sydow dead.
Oh, okay.
And they cut to Reagan as the demon, and she's giggling. That's the creep where she's like, that's the really creepy, weird part. And that's when he loses and he starts punching her because he's like,
Yeah. To me, the creepiest part was the attic.
Yeah. Well, again, that's the biggest with the jump scares. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you made it. Made it through the whole thing.
Ka-ching!
Isn't that amazing? I figured that once we got past the opening vomit, like once we got into that part, I was like, all right, I think you're in for the long. And I said, I kept looking over at you, and at one point you had your hand over your mouth and your watch. I'm like, oh, she's into it. It's like she's really involved. So this is an intense.
Yeah, I thought about skipping out a number of times, the attic was the one where I was like,
I know. Yeah, I know. I had the remote in my hand the whole time, just in case. Oh, we have to talk about Lee J. Cobb as Lieutenant Kinderman.
Creepy guy. I felt like he was from a different movie.
Did you really? Oh, yeah. I like him. I love him.
I did like him.
Okay.
But I felt like he was the Pink Panther or something.
Interesting. Okay.
He's one of my favorite characters. I don't mean in a bad way.
Okay.
I mean,
all right.
Like, I just felt like, I guess he reminded me so much of that. And it's not like he's being goofy or anything.
No,
but
I love him. He's one of my favorite actors. He was in 12 Angry Men. He's one of my favorite actors. So I love how nice he is. I love the whole bit about, can you give my daughter an autograph? And she's like, what's her name? And then he giggles, it's for me. And he's like, that movie Angel, you did, I saw it six times. Really? Like, I just love that he's a big old. And there's a director's cut of this movie with like an extra 20 minutes, which is not the version we watched.
Holy Moses.
And the ending is different. And it ends with Lieutenant Kinderman finding the priest and talking about going to the movies, where he offers him to go to the movies.
Uh-huh.
And the priest takes him up on it. And so you feel like that Kinderman and the priest are going to be friends. And I like that. It's a nice, it's a warmer ending. But I actually like this one, that it ends with the priest at the top of those stairs being reminded what happened and then just turns around and walks the other way. And then you hear that tubular bells music come in.
Da-da-da-da.
Warner Brothers, when they released this in 1975, they opened it on Christmas Day.
That's a bizarre
choice.
Can
you imagine what a thumb in the eye to kind of like organized religion this is? Like that's such a provocation. No movie studio would dare risk that nowadays.
Right?
That would be so offensive.
Right? Wow.
Yeah. Christmas, you imagine seeing this. There were whole things about people fainted and all sorts of, because people just weren't, this was really out there for a major studio release.
I remember there being a lot of hubbub about it.
Right. You were alive back then. Did you have any awareness of it? You were a little kid, but did you have
awareness? I remember people talking about it. I knew, like, the pea soup thing.
Right. It became sort of part of the culture in a weird way, is that whole
thing. Yeah. The head spinning around. I think that's all I really knew about it.
Right.
Yeah, I never had interest in seeing it.
I wouldn't think so.
Any way, shape, or form.
That is the voice of the demon when it's inside Reagan is the actress Mercedes McCambridge.
I've heard of her.
Yeah. Can you imagine like her spending, you know, like days on end just recording the most foul, you know, the C word and this word and all this stuff. And apparently to get ready for it, like she drank and smoked for like a month straight.
Did she
to get
hang
her
out with Tom Waits?
Yeah, to get her voice all raspy and stuff like that.
What was
that
he gargled?
Gargled razor blades.
Razor blades.
Yeah,
there we go.
Razor blades.
Yeah. In other words, beautiful.
In other words, beautiful, yeah. So you liked this movie.
Again, not the word choice that I would use, but It was definitely compelling. I mean, considering how early, I mean, almost from the start, I was like, no, I'm not going to watch this. And then, you know, the attic with, yeah, I'm definitely not watching this. But I had, you know, that took a lot of compelling to get me through, because, you know, it was like a fight. The demon that wanted me to just give it up.
Mm-hmm. They don't expressly say it, but I get the sense that, like, that whole opening sequence in Iraq with Father Marin, where he discovers the statue, mm-hmm. it's like that's a symbol that there is something evil has been unleashed in the world, and it just happens to manifest itself on the other side of the planet inside this little girl.
I was waiting for the tie-in, and then finally
it came. They keep it really vague.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you happen to notice the little flashes of the demon face that he stuck in?
Yes.
Yeah. He did that a couple times where it's, you just see that little flash of a...
And you're like, what did I just see?
Yeah. It goes by so fast that you don't really mm-hmm. notice it. And then, again, in the director's cut, there's a much more memorable one, noticeable. Mm-hmm. But I like this one better because it's subtler. Mm-hmm. In the director's cut, there's a scene where Reagan walks down the stairs like a spider backwards.
Ew.
Where, like, her back is... Like her, she's doing like a backflip, and I've seen that scene, and it's just too much. Mm-hmm. Like you're like, it makes sense. Like, I think the version that he ended up putting in theaters is the better one, is the right one, because it's more subtle. Not subtle, but you know what I mean. It's just not going.
It's not too far.
Yeah, I mean, when she does the spider walk, you're like, well, all right.
I think the head spinning around was one too far.
You think that? Think it was a little too far? Okay. Yeah.
That pulled me out of it.
Did it really?
Yeah. Then it wasn't, like, that wasn't scary.
Okay.
To me. But there was so much else that was.
Yeah, it was good. It's, like I said, I think it's a...
I see why it's a classic.
Yeah. Yeah. The one other bit I wanted to mention in terms of the way William Friedkin just didn't give a F was when Reagan punches her mm-hmm. and knocks her across the room. And she screams, like in agony. That's not Ellen Burstyn acting. That's Ellen Burstyn who, like, dislocated a disc in her back.
Oh, my gosh.
Because the stunt, she was hooked up to a pulley. And mm-hmm. The stunt crew would yank her uh-huh. when she gets slapped. And they yanked her too hard and pulled her into, like, a wall. And she really hurt herself. And that was her screaming in agony. And William Friedkin promised he wouldn't use that take. And then he did.
Wow.
And apparently, like, Ellen Burstyn was not too happy about that, but Friedkin didn't care.
Right?
Or, not that he didn't care, but
it was perfect.
He was like, yeah, I mean, William Friedkin, his previous film was The French Connection, which is a masterpiece, and then he did this, and then he did a movie called Sorcerer, which is, was not popular, but is also a masterpiece. So he was on a roll in the 70s. He was on an amazing roll. So, yeah, I mean, this movie is just, it takes a real singular vision to put something this ugly on the screen, but not make
it. That's true. Like, yeah. It's way ugly.
Yeah. Just looking at this poor little girl with all the uh-huh. hideous face and all the stuff.
And all the lash marks and googly eyes.
Yeah. And the just the whole thing of where she talks like the Damien's mother is mm-hmm. really upsetting.
And the things that she says, yeah. I can't imagine her parents letting her say those things on screen or off.
Linda Blair had a tough life after this movie. Got hooked on drugs and had a really rough life. Hmm. I think she's okay now.
I hope so.
I think she had her... And, you know, it might have just been that anybody... You know, a lot of child actors have rough lives.
Mm-hmm.
But it also might have been that this... Like, she was so pigeonholed.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't help that she did Exorcist 2. Couple years later, and so she just became famous as, you know, the demon.
What a way to be typecast.
Yeah. Exorcist 2 is total garbage. Absolute garbage. This movie just should just be by itself. It doesn't. Because it has essentially a happy-ish end.
Right. You feel like she's okay, the mom's okay. I mean, they're all battered and bruised, but...
And she says she doesn't remember any of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, and yet she kisses the priest, uh-huh. so she knows she has some...
Right, connection. Does she remember how she got all the bruises and scrapes and scratches?
Probably not. Probably not.
I can't believe her staff stuck with her.
Yeah, they really earned some extra pay.
Right.
Having to put up with that nonsense.
Carl and what's the... Oh, and then that woman, the housekeeper?
Housekeeper.
I felt like they were married, Carl and that woman.
Huh, yeah. They don't suggest that.
Well, she's staying at the house by herself.
Well, no, maybe Carl is leaving. Maybe Carl's coming back. He's driving them.
Maybe he's
going to come back.
Not for 1 minute would I be in that house by myself. Like, if I locked the gate, I would be on the outside of it, not the inside.
Yeah, because it's like, how do you know the demon's dead?
Right?
Nobody knows.
All the stuff that happened in there, I'm not going to feel good about being in that house.
Yeah. Luckily, you don't have to worry about this. We're good.
I'm not sure how I feel about being in this one right now.
There. Did the ice cream help?
The ice cream helped.
Okay, good.
This calls for something extra, though.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Interesting. Mm. Okay. Well, I think we're going to end the show now because we have to
Ace, pull out the futon.
Why am I? What? I think I've shown you something very interesting and very good. I don't think I deserve punishment for this.
I don't know. I think that you should be a little more careful going forward.
Well, next week we'll do something a little easier. But I said, you got through it, though. Finding Nemo 2. Finding Dory. No, you got through it. You got through it. You were involved in it.
Yes, I was.
And...
Yeah, I would say it's a good movie.
It's a good movie.
Which, wow. The good movie you love to hate.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go. So, that is The Exorcist. You did it, babe. I'm so proud of you.
I did it. Woohoo!
So proud of you.
High five.
Terrorist
fist bump.
I'm going to talk like Pazuzu the whole time. That's it. It's a great movie. I don't get tired of watching it. This is a good movie to listen to. I listen to this one a lot at work for whatever reason.
That explains a lot of things.
There you go. No, it's good. It's just we're kind of just going in circles, but the performances are all so good. Mm-hmm. The effects are really good. The story's compelling. Mm-hmm. It's a movie that I think even people who are not religious can watch and enjoy the sort of religiosity of it without like it feeling like it's propaganda.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it didn't feel like propaganda.
They make those Christian movies that are basically like the things with like Kirk Cameron and stuff, and those are basically propaganda movies. This is not that.
Nope.
It's kind of interesting to me that there are people who are like very religious who don't don't want to see this movie, but this movie actually is presenting, you know, Catholicism as like the one true religion because it works. You know, I mean, like,
well, they said a rabbi could do it too.
Well, that's true. Well, they did say that.
So
okay.
Not the one true religion, but that religion is the way out of this particular dilemma.
Right. But I mean, that's right. But I mean, this movie is squarely not atheist or agnostic. Right. This movie is
absolutely
William Friedkin is in all the years he's talked about since is very much like this is a movie about maybe you should have faith, maybe you shouldn't. And I always think that's kind of nuts. Of course you should in this movie because it's clear that the religious powers of good is what drives the demon out. That's clearly, I mean, this is not a movie that's being subtle about whether there's really a demon here. Of course there's really a demon.
I saw him throw the bed around.
Yeah, exactly.
And the kid. And the furniture.
Yep.
And all the things
on the
shelves.
All those doctors couldn't help or anything.
Split the door. Crashed the ceiling.
I wonder if Chris McGill ever tells the father what happened. Because we never get to see him.
That'd be a tough one to explain, wouldn't it? And I don't think she would say, hey, honey, because it didn't sound like she was really fond of him.
Yeah. I love that. We get their whole dynamic in just that one scene where she's trying to call him on the phone. And she's like,
are you serious?
Maybe he's not there. Oh, bullshit. He doesn't care. He doesn't give a shit. It's his daughter's birthday. And then we see that Reagan
is overhearing that.
Which I always feel like is partly lays the groundwork for
it
maybe
opens her
being vulnerable. There you go.
To it.
Being a little vulnerable to attack. Yeah. So that kind of thing. Okay. Well, you did it, babe.
I did it.
So proud of you.
I am Wonder Woman.
Hard as nails. All right. Well, that is going to do it for Turn It Off with Tracy, episode 6. A winner. winner, chicken dinner. You did it. You outpaced everybody's guess.
See that?
All over on Twitter and Facebook. Everybody was like opening credits, opening scene with Father Marin. You beat them all, babe. You beat the odds.
Woohoo!
So, all right. Well, I guess that's going to do it.
All right.
Thank you once again, my love.
Thank you.
For watching.
That was. I love you.
I love you. We'll watch something that with like Robert Downey Jr. now or Chris Pine.
There we go. So there we go.
All right.
Okay.
All right. So thanks everybody for listening, and thanks for everybody for the support for the show. It's been a lot of fun seeing everybody's response, and it's been great. So thank you so much, everybody, for listening. And again, thank you so much for watching Exorcism with me, babe. I love you.
I love you more.
I love you more. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
All right, stop the presses. In an unprecedented move for the show, we are back for a second bite at the Exorcist apple. Because after we recorded the show, the way we do the show is we record our comments and our thoughts right after we watch it. That way it's fresh and it's in our mind and it's in your mind. But you said that you had a kind of some more stuff you wanted to talk about. So we decided we're going to come back a couple days later. You've had a couple days for the movie to percolate further in your mind. And so what are some additional thoughts you have about the Exorcist?
I know that the day after we on Saturday, the day after we watched, I was like, oh, we missed this. We missed that. We should have talked about a bunch of different things. The only thing that really sticks in my mind right now is Lieutenant... What's his name?
Lieutenant Kinderman, played by Lee J. Cobb.
When Lieutenant... Lieutenant...
Lieutenant Kinderman.
Lieutenant Kinderman walks into the room, Father...
Karras.
Karras takes the flight out the window.
He pitched himself out the window, yeah.
And down the stairs to his untimely death. You see Lieutenant Kinderman look around the room, and I feel like there's this expression that comes across his face as like, yeah, I can't write this up. This is...
Right.
They're going to put me away.
Right. You're imagining the line in Hot Fuzz. It's like, this is going to be an awful lot of paperwork.
Copious amounts of
paperwork. Copious amount of paperwork, yeah.
No, but that if he even attempted to do it.
Right. How can you possibly?
Because nobody could imagine that it would be that, what it was. That horrific. And if he tried to put that to paper, that he would be fired and probably straitjacketed.
Yeah, there are so many movies where, you know, like crazy events happen and then the movie ends. And I've always had that thing of like, well, what happens right after this? Like, we talked about that with The Shining. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, what does Wendy explain to like the authorities? Hey, you know, my husband went nuts in the hotel. Oh, and I saw a bunch of skeletons. And then I saw the guy in a bear costume blowing another guy. Like, all that reality. So you wonder about the Exorcist. Yeah, how does Lieutenant Kinderman explain any of this?
He doesn't. He walks away.
Right. He's still on the job because, as I told you, in the director's cut. But, yeah.
Yeah, but he pretends this never happened.
Right. Now, one of the things we didn't mention is that this was, quote-unquote, based on a true story. I mean, of course, it's based on a book by William Peter Blatty, who wrote the screenplay. But it's based on a supposedly real event in 1948 of a young boy in Maryland who had an exorcism performed on him. Now, in the years since, doctors that have apparently examined the documents have said they think the kid was just mentally ill and he had problems that medical science just didn't know how to deal with in 1948, so they chalked that up to exorcism. Who knows? You know, none of us will ever know. But
And some people are just never will never be open to the idea that that could happen,
right?
And who knows? I certainly don't.
Did you get the sense that there was a bit of like sexism with the doctors, the way they talk to Chris McNeil? Now there is a woman doctor. I mean, they're not all male, but they're 95% male. And you get the sense the way they're kind of talking down to her a little, because I mean she's hysterical, you know. Which, understandably.
And they're treating her like she's hysterical.
Right.
As in, you know, hysterical woman, not hysterical because this is really traumatic.
Right. The scene where, like, when the one doctor that finally brings up the idea of an exorcism. Mm-hmm. He's like, do you have any religious beliefs? Like, he's smiling through it because he realized he thinks it's so absurd.
Well, so, and or maybe he's afraid that she's going to think what he's saying is absurd. Maybe. Maybe he doesn't really think it's absurd. But and he saw the bed flying around, so.
I don't know if that's one of the ones that sees the bed flying around. I don't know. I don't have to remember. One of the other doctors, though, is an actor, Robert Simons. He's the one who explains to Chris McNeil about the whole people can have incredible strength.
Yeah.
That's the guy from MASH. He was the guy that sends Winchester to the 477.
Oh, yeah.
Much like my friend...
The Welcher.
My friend Michael Bailey, fellow podcaster, he has the thing that he calls It All Comes Back to Superman, where virtually every piece of pop culture he encounters has some connection to Superman in some either, you know, strong way or tangential way. I'm that with MASH. Like, to me, it's like everything we watch, everything that I watch, there's some connection
Absolutely.
To MASH. And so this guy is in MASH.
That is 110%.
And there's actually another actor, the brother of Father Karras's uncle. The Greek guy. He's mm-hmm. Greek in MASH. He's in the episode Private Charles Lamb. He's the Greek commander that shows up and says he's going to bring a bunch of ouzo for everybody for a big party. So there's two people from MASH in this movie. The other thing we wanted to mention we talked about is the makeup, because you asked me how old Max von Sydow was in this movie, and I first said to you, oh, he must be in like his 60s at this point. And then after I said that to you, I'm like, wait, this movie's 45 years old. He couldn't have been in his 60s. That Max von Sydow's not 105 years old. I looked it up. He's younger than I am now. In Exorcist.
In The Exorcist?
He is younger than I am now.
How old was he?
He was like 42.
No way.
So the makeup for him is out.
Did they get an Oscar for that?
No. It was not even nominated for makeup.
No
Dick,
way.
Dick Smith is the guy that did the makeup. He's famous for all the crap they put on Linda Blair's face, because that's so much more noticeable.
Sure.
But all that stuff on Max von Sydow is... He's been so old for so long that I just sort of accept that. But after you asked me, I was like, oh my God, he's a young man when he did that movie. But the way his hands shake and the liver spots on his hands.
I thought he was really dying.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's a tremendous, tremendous actor. But yeah, he was like 42 when he did that movie. Isn't that amazing?
That's going to take a while for me to wrap my head around.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, Dick Smith, the guy did the makeup.
But just his whole physicality.
Guy. Yeah. Well, he's Max von Sydow. Like, he's one of the greatest actors we have out there. So, I mean, he just brings
How many Oscars does he have?
He has been nominated for two, but he has never won.
You're kidding.
He's only been nominated twice.
That's ridiculous.
You know, most of it, his career has been overseas. Like, he did a lot of movies with Ingmar Bergman, and so they're foreign films, and so they don't, you know, he just hasn't been in that many American films.
Don't they have a foreign film category?
They do, but they don't do acting. Like, it's a lot harder to get nominated when you're in foreign films most of the time, and that's most of his career.
We need a campaign.
A retroactive Oscar for Max von Sydow.
Right.
You think about it, it's funny, everyone thinks of Linda Blair in this movie and Ellen Burstyn, but Max von Sydow is the title character. He's the exorcist. He's literally it's him on the poster. Mm-hmm. That shot of the silhouette I love that shot too, when he gets out of the cab and it's all the mist. Mm-hmm. Like, that's such a beautiful, eerie, atmospheric mm-hmm. kind of shot. So, so now I've been doing most of the talking here. So now that, like, you've had a couple days to think about it, like, do you think any differently about it? Are you happy you saw it?
I'm happy I made it through. I think that was a triumph of will, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
No, I still think it was a really good movie. I think it was compelling.
You would never want to watch it again?
No, sir.
Okay.
Thank you anyway.
All right.
Yeah. It actually ran through my mind for a moment when I was trying to remember all the things that we forgot to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But no, one and done.
Okay. I think that was all that I wanted to talk about. Talk about the actors. We didn't mention Max von Sydow on the first pass, and we really need to, because again,
he absolutely needs to be mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, him and Father Karras, him and Jason Miller are a great duo. I love when he asks, Jason Miller says, "Do you want to hear the details of the case?" And he's like, "Why?" I love that response. It's like, what does it matter? We're gonna get rid of this demon out of it. Like, what do I care? And I love the whole idea of the demon is a liar. And he will mix the truth with lies.
For some reason, it seems really precious.
Yeah, like a certain president we can think of. But, I mean, it's like, and you think about how deceptive that is someone who mixes in the truth with lies, because then you're,
But this part is true.
This part is true, and then you start, right, so, mm-hmm. I mean, the devil really plays dirty, of course, like with the whole doing the mother's voice. Mm-hmm. That's always a creepy effect in movies where they dub in another voice over mm-hmm. the actor. There's something very discordant about seeing a voice that you know doesn't match
right.
the person. There's right. Not to get too far afield, but there's a Abbott and Costello movie called The Time of Their Lives.
So this is you not going.
Trust me. There's an Abbott and Costello movie called The Time of Their Lives where Lou plays a Revolutionary War soldier who is a ghost in the 1940s, and there's a seance scene,
uh-huh.
and they dub in a male voice over a woman who's doing the seance, like she's been uh-huh. possessed. And it's creepy. It's genuinely creepy, and you can't believe that there's anything creepy in an Abbott and Costello movie.
Right.
So when they dub in different voices, it's weird. And so when you see Linda Blair talk like
with the
priest, she talks like – well, not the priest. She talks like the mother. At one point, she talks like the director who she murdered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you know what your daughter did? You know, that hard. Like, it's just.
I don't think he said daughter.
He did, but he stuck in another word, which we're not going to say here on the show. That's a whole weird angle, too. The director keeps chasing after the butler, calling him a Nazi.
Yeah.
Like, that was just like a weird old detail. Nazi bastard.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad that you don't have any regrets. For having watched?
No. And I didn't have nightmares or anything either, so.
Have you had nightmares from any of the movies we've watched so far?
No. I think there was one that did sort of come to me, but it wasn't a nightmare.
Okay.
I'm thinking maybe the werewolf one.
Werewolf in London. And then the other thing, we did talk briefly about the sequels. There are three sequels and a TV show.
That's hard.
The second movie's garbage. The third movie, I've never seen it, but David Ace Gutierrez has seen it and says it's very good. But he also admits that it, like, undoes a lot of the story of the first one, which I don't want to see that. The fourth one, I don't even have any interest in it. And the TV show is a direct sequel to the movie where we find out that, spoiler alert, Gina Davis's character is Reagan grown up. And I guess she, like, her family. Like, it's the extra. I mean, look, when a movie makes hundreds of millions of dollars in 1973 money,
mm-hmm.
they're going to make sequels. There's just movie studios can't resist. But this movie does not need to have another installment. This movie is a closed circle. Mm-hmm. You know, it ends with good winning out. It ends with Reagan having been pushed through, the mother being pushed through this horrible experience. And that's the end of the movie. There's just no further story to this. So it's kind of a shame that they dragging it out a bit. But what can you do?
When you have something, milk it to death.
Yeah, exactly. The whole, you know, there's a quote-unquote famous story about when Paramount wanted Francis Ford Coppola to make The Godfather 2, and he didn't want to make Godfather 2 because he just thought the story's over. Mm-hmm. And apparently the head of the studio, Charlie Bluthorn, said something like, "You have the formula for Coca-Cola, and you don't want to make no more bottles." You know, like, he's just that. So I'm sure with Exorcist, they have that brand is just so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You can see why you don't. And there's a movie in 1980, in the mid-80s, a parody movie of horror movies called Repossessed with Leslie Nielsen as a priest.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And Linda Blair is in the movie as a possessed girl. So she kind of kept milking that for a long time. But
well, like you said, she was typecast.
Yeah, she had a rough – she really didn't get it's hard to know whether she has a lot else going on acting-wise because I just haven't seen her in too much else other than – I know she did that jail movie.
Yes, the jail movie. What was that? Because I feel like it was an after-school special.
It was. It was like a TV movie.
Really?
Yeah. The TV movie she did is called Born Innocent, and apparently I've never seen it, but you're familiar with it. And like, she gets
– I didn't see it, but I heard things about it.
Like, she gets raped with a broomstick or something
by
other prisoners or something.
Inmates,
like, yeah. Man, she was doing –
other girls.
She's doing rough stuff for a kid actor. She's,
how old was she when she did that one? 1974. It was one year later.
Yeah, 1 year after Exorcist.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, her parents probably should have maybe –
intervened a little
a little less money chasing, but
more hands on.
But apparently she's okay now, like, which is good, which is good. And she's like, her and Ellen Burstyn, I think, they said they're friends and stuff like that, which is nice. So yeah, I mean, it's a movie for everybody to be proud of. It's a great achievement. Hard to make a good horror movie. Hard to make a good one. It's easy to make a horror movie. Hard to make a good one, and especially one that still scares people 45 years later because tastes change. But this movie's still very intense. So.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, do you have anything else you want to say about The Exorcist?
I don't think so.
You don't want to watch it again? You sure?
No, thank you.
You sure?
I'm sure.
We can.
Hard
pass. I have it on DVD.
That's great.
We'll watch the audio commentary. Well,
probably not.
Okay, all right.
You can do that all on your own.
I already have. Okay, all right. Well, like I said, thank you once again for getting through it. I'm proud of you, but and I'm glad you enjoyed it as much as you could.
Enjoy.
Mm.
I was compelled.
There you go. Okay, well, that really is going to do it. We've now done our two segments on The Exorcist. We'll be back next week with something else. But big achievement, babe. Well done.
Big achievement.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, once again for listening, and we will see you later. Bye.
Bye.